This is the story of the one. As a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility, he knows keeping the line up and running is a top priority. That's why he chooses Grainger. Because when a drive belt gets damaged, Grainger makes it easy to find the exact specs for the replacement product he needs. And next day delivery helps ensure he'll have everything in place and running like clockwork. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done. If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome to Terrace Talk as we look ahead to Norwich City's game at Brentford. I'm very pleased to say joining us is Billy Grant from the Besotted podcast, as you can see. Billy, how are you doing? And pun fully intended, you guys must be buzzing at the moment.
Yeah. Listen, thanks for inviting me on, Dave. And, you know, welcome to you guys as well, coming down to New Griffin Park, as we call it tomorrow. Right. Hope you guys and girls have a great day. Great day out. It's always a good day out, Brentford, you know, but you guys are pretty, guys and girls, you're very, you know, Brentford like the back of your hands now. So, you know, there's loads of places to go out, loads of different pubs, and you can all wear your colours. It's all friendly. You know, it's a bit of a laugh down there. We've moved to our new stadium as well. And like I said to you, we are definitely buzzing. Yeah, we're definitely buzzing because it's been a long time coming, this Premier League malarkey. You know, I never would have believed that I would have got here. Brentford would have got here. And, you know, you've been here so many times before. You know, you were like you're the initial Premier League, you know, club, you know what I'm saying, 1992. So you've been here many, many times before. Whereas, I mean, in fact, I remember we played you in that year. I'm pretty sure we played you in the FA Cup in that year. I remember coming up, I did a coach and we beat you 2-1, if I remember rightly. We turned up little cheese hats, actually. There's a little diversion there. But you know what I'm saying? But that was, and I remember that because for us, and this just goes to show you how far we've come, that game was a massive game for us because we had got to the like third or fourth round, whatever it was at that time, which, you know, when you're in the lower leagues, you know, when you're in the sort of third division or third tier, getting to the third round of the FA Cup is massive. It's so massive, you know. And I think we got to, it was either the third or the fourth round it was. And all of a sudden, Norwich came out the hat. It's like, oh, Norwich, they're in the top league. They're in the Premier League. Like, you know, and I remember I did a coach and we did it. We all got excited. Everyone, all these cheese hats. And we turned up and went to some pub somewhere. And we actually had a brilliant laugh and beat you in the end. And it was just like, everyone talked about that for years to come, you know. But we never thought that, you know, we'll be playing Norwich on the same terms in the Premier League. So I think for me, that just kind of shows you how far we've come. And, you know, I mean, I'm sitting here at me smiling. Yeah, we've had a great start, but I'm not being funny. We could lose all the next load of our matches. But the thing is that, you know, you can't take it away from me or any Brentford fan to kind of just enjoy the moment, you know, to enjoy what's been going on at the moment now, to ever, you know, just to smile and to sort of revel in it, because I'm not being funny, you know, I've been to Accrington, I've been to Grimsby, you know, I've been to Wrexham, all these places, which I love going to. Brilliant, brilliant places to go to, but you'd never think it's going to be, you know, your Norwiches and your Burnleys and your Man Cities and your Liverpool. So when we do get there, just everyone just give us a bit of time to just enjoy ourselves and have a little bit of a laugh. You know, you've been here many times before, so you know what it's like. And I'm sure, as people will say, the novelty will wear off after a while. And we can feel the novelty wearing off for the pundits, who are obviously very excited about us in the first few weeks. But you could feel the novelties wearing off. They've kind of got used to us being in there to a certain extent, and I think they're probably waiting for the bees to take a bit of a fall so that they can they can start talking about us again.
Well, it's the first top flight meeting of the clubs, isn't it? And Norwich are actually unbeaten in the last six that they've been to Brentford. But and I think most of the Norwich fans have been full of respect for the work that's been going on at Brentford in recent years. And you could see just gradually building, and really there was a really good project. But now the worries are creeping in that you might have actually managed to leapfrog Norwich, and that Norwich have maybe stagnated a little bit. Let's, you know, the highs from these early days, the Arsenal and Liverpool game at home, they must have been pretty special. I remember seeing the images on Match of the Day and stuff from the Arsenal game where there's people crying in the stands and stuff. That they must have been epic.
Arsenal was on another level. I mean, I actually wanted, and they sometimes ask you, or a lot of people are asking you before the season started, you know, before the fixtures are out, okay, you're in the Premier League now, you know, ideally, what would your first game be? And I said Arsenal at home. Right. And the reason why is that I used to live right, you know, next to Arsenal. I used to live in Stoke Newington for years. Mm. So I was kind of embedded in that Arsenal community. I say the Arsenal community probably one step down from where it is now. It was just after they kind of won the league. Mm. with the last kick of the game, and then they went into the sort of the Wenger era. So I was there at the sort of kind of early Wenger era, and it was actually kind of like organic, the way it's organically growing and Arsenal was growing, it was kind of nice. So I was really fully kind of ensconced in that, even though I was a Brentford fan. So I'd sit in the local pubs and I'd watch Arsenal play their games, you know, alongside Arsenal fans with my Brentford shirt on, you know, just, you know, tipping me out saying, okay, that's kind of cool, you know. But Arsenal have kind of gone on to be another beast since then, I think. So it's quite interesting, kind of, you know, me saying I'd love to be, you know, I'd love Arsenal to come to Brentford, because also Arsenal are one of the very few teams that actually never been to, as we call it, New Griffin Park. Man United are another team that have actually never been there either as well, you know, in the whole time that I've supported them. So for them to come out of the hat first was a little bit like, whoa, you know. And then it was a little bit of kind of like, you know, let's just have a bit of a party, as Brentford do, because we do our kick football out of football thing there. We basically make sure that we enjoy the pre-match, the post-match, but during the match, we kind of like, you know, it normally goes horribly wrong for us, you know, that's in the past 40 years. So we make sure that the pre and post-party are good, kick football out of football. And so we made sure that we had a right laugh. So before that Arsenal game, literally everyone took the day off work. You know, they were in the pub by midday. The whole place was buzzing. We had the walk from the ground to the new stadium, which is obviously a different walk than it was usually before. So, you know, working out, you know, when do we leave? Which route do we take? Do we go to the left of the flyover, or the right of the flyover, because it's over the M4 motorway? Just things like that, which was sort of quite exciting for us, like, you know. And then we got in 40 minutes before the game started. Normally we get in about 2 minutes after the game started, but we were 40 minutes before, got Thomas Frank whipping the crowd into a frenzy. And it was just, it was amazing before the game even started. And the fact that we actually won the game, I mean, it was on another level. So it's almost like, you know, you take those things away with you. That Liverpool game was a fantastic game. And the fact that we competed, you take those things away with you. And, you know, we don't know how we're going to do at the end of the season. But the thing that I will say is that, you know, we have to cherish moments like that and days like that, because, listen, we're all football fans here. We have ups and downs. We have some great moments. You know, Norwich have had some great moments as well. You've had some down moments. And that's how it goes with football. I mean, you know, some clubs, you know, some people might say they're very lucky to only have up moments, and their up moment would be not finishing first, finishing second or third. And it's kind of like a little bit like, OK, I understand that. But the thing about it is that those clubs really kind of hit sort of rocky roads when they end up finishing 8th and 10th and 12th. Then you see there's a lot of confusion within their fans. So I quite like the fact that, you know, we get that kind of more of a varied thing. And I suppose it keeps you grounded and keeps you level headed.
It does, yeah. I mean, that, as you say, Norwich beat Man City last time. They won at Everton, still went down. The last time before that, under Alex Neil, they won at Old Trafford. First time in 26 years, I think it was, still went down. So you've got to savour those big moments. Obviously, you come into this one on the back of three defeats. The result at Burnley was maybe a little bit of a surprise, the 3-1, although Burnley almost seemed like they might be starting to play some reasonable football, perhaps. But the two games before that, the Chelsea and Leicester games, they looked like they were pretty narrow defeats, weren't they?
Chelsea game, the first half, Chelsea, it was one of those ones where the first half we kept in the game, and Chelsea were playing their game, you know. Kante was brilliant in that first half. He was just running the show. But Norgaard was also playing very, very well, like, you know. But Chelsea was almost like, we felt we need to get to half time, but you could see within the last 10 minutes of the first half that Chelsea were kind of just like chiseling away, just kind of getting in there, but we were still holding them out. So it was a little bit annoying that we scored, they scored a goal in pretty much an injury time in the first half, went 1-0 ahead. But the second half, I'm not being funny, we battered them. We absolutely annihilated them in the second half. And that's probably the big fear with us, with Brentford, because we are very good at creating chances. You know, we talk quite a lot about stats, even at Besotted. You check out the podcast, PrideOfWest.London as well. And it's out now as well. We've got a podcast which is out now, which has got a preview. It's got, Talk Norwich City is actually doing the Norwich preview on that as well. So definitely check that out. But we've got our stats guy called Will the Spreadsheet Winker, we call him, And he does this, long story, but basically it was an insult that Nottingham Forest fans gave us because we do a lot of stats analysis, so when they beat us, they called us spreadsheet winkers, except for they weren't so polite what they called us, so we decided to create a little section in our podcast called the Spreadsheet Winker. And Will was great. He lives up in Manchester. He analysed the different games, and so in the analysis of that, we were absolutely, if you use XG, if you like, you might love it, you might hate it, but literally we had created so many massive chances. As you've seen, their goalkeeper was wicked, and it's one of those scenarios where, when you create these big chances, for Brentford, in effect, it's almost like put the ball on the 6-yard box, put the ball in the back of the net. That's kind of how we, like to play our football. Whereas, when we had Benrahma in the side as well, he would be the one where if you weren't able to do that, he'd take a shot from 40 yards, which would have like 1 in 100 chance of going in the back of the net. So yeah, we created a lot of, big chances, and we didn't score. And against Liverpool, against the same thing as well, we scored 3 goals against them. We let in 3 goals. It was really great. But the fear that we have is that this year, as opposed to last year, we created loads of high quality chances. And what we did is that we missed a lot of them, but we still put a lot of them in the back of the net. And the reason why you miss a lot of them is that you know, the strikers that you've got and the players that you've got, they're obviously not Premier League quality and they're still learning their game. So naturally, they're not going to score as many as, the top class strikers in the Premier League. If you had a top class striker in the Premier League and you created those chances, bam, you'd be well and truly away. The fear that we have is that this year we're probably creating slightly less chances. So we know that any chance that we create, we need to put them in the back of the net because we're not creating as many chances as we are last season. And the fact that, Brian and Boomer's hit the post about, I think it's 7 times or something ridiculous, stuff like that, and Ivan Toney has missed quite a few chances, even though his work rate and his play has been brilliant. That's the one thing that's got me slightly worried about us this season, actually putting our chances away in the back of the net. We play Brighton, and Brighton, 3 chances we had, very, very good chances. Brighton had 1 chance with Trossard in the 90th minute, bang, in the back of the net. Aston Villa, same thing. We had some really good chances, should have really been home and dry. And then Buendia scored, brilliant goal, pulled it for the back of the edge of the area, bang, in the back of the net. So this is the thing that we're being sucker punched by, and we're learning our game, where people always said to us, you need to watch out in the Premier League. You give a good player a second and they're going to punish you. Going back to the Burnley game, though, Burnley, I'm not sure whether or not it's the injuries that we've got, because we've got a load of injuries. And that's not making any excuses. We just do. So, when our goalkeeper, Raya, who's a brilliant goalkeeper, is out, we put a new goalkeeper in and he doesn't quite gel with his defence, that's going to cause you a few problems. So when you've got him out, you've got, Aya, who we bought from Celtic, who's a brilliant centre-back. When you've got him out, when you've got Brian and Bumo, who plays off Ivan Toney, when you've got players like that out, it causes you some problems. But saying that, Burnley were brilliant. I mean, I'm not being funny, but Burnley, for the first minute, as soon as the referee's whistle, they were at us and they were all over us. And they were Chris Wood, who I think normally is, be honestly quite rubbish. You know what I'm saying? He was great. And he was, instrumental to the way that they played. They were, honestly, they were really, really, and we just couldn't handle them. And this is the first time I'll say this for a fact, because I'm not rose tinted glasses. I'm honest. And we're, we're championship stroke EFL team who we try to be real about football. And you've got to tip your hat to play, because we're football fans at the end of the day. And we came away from Burnley, and if you listen to, like I said, our post-match podcast as well, PrideOfWest.London, I interviewed about 30 minutes Burnley fans and Brentford fans afterwards, and it's worthwhile Norwich fans actually having to listen to that, because it'll give you a real feel for what we're about, what our fans are about, but what also has been said about the game. And every single Brentford fan said, look, fair play, Burnley. You were better than us from beginning to end. Every single part of the pitch, you were better than us, because you came into that game fully prepared and you went bang and you did what you had to do. And you might be at the bottom of the league, but, if you do that every week, you're not going to end up bottom of the league, because you play some great football. So I think, for us, Brentford, we have to watch out, because we know we have to be on our game. But we also realise that teams out there, they're decent teams out there. Norwich, listen, you've got some great players. So you might be at the bottom, but you know, all you need is one decent performance. You come decent performance, get a decent result, and it could turn your whole season around. So we need to be, I say, on the ball, as you guys say, on the ball, Brentford, you know. So.
Well, Cornet looks like he's a really good signing for Burnley. That seems like he's kicked them on a level. But the way that you've described that Chelsea game there, that you only lost 2-1, but you were in the game. That's what Norwich fans...
1-0.
Sorry, 1-0, sorry. That's what Norwich fans are desperate for at the moment. You know, they just completely fell apart to a 7-0. You can handle losing. You can handle being in a relegation fight as long as you're competitive, as long as you're battling, and they're not doing that. And I can sympathise with your spreadsheet man as well, actually, because when I first started going to away games with my dad and his mates when I was, 14, 15, and they let me have my first pint occasionally and stuff like that, his best mate has called me Stato ever since then. Still, I'm 35 now. Whenever I see him, straight away, Stato, how's it going? So I think that will stick with me for forever. You mentioned how good Tony is. We all think he's a very, very good player. But he's one that I think has stuck in the mind for Norwich fans, as in, why didn't Norwich go for him? He was available for a pretty reasonable fee from Peterborough, wasn't he? And similarly, now this summer, you managed to beat Norwich to Christoph Eyer from Celtic as well. So how obviously, he's just picked up this injury, so he's not going to be involved. But how good has he been so far? And how much of a difference has he made? Because I think if Norwich could have got him in June when they were trying to first get him, then it could have made a big difference for them.
Christoph Eyer is massive. He's a massive, brilliant player. You know, like when you, again, if you've watched millions of football matches, if you've watched so many football matches, you just know, you know, you don't need to have a look at the stats and the figures. And if you like, you look at a play and you go, oh, he's quite good, isn't he? Mm. Oh, God, what he's done. Oh, that's really clever, isn't it? And it was one of those ones where Eyer, he just picks the ball up. He sort of seamlessly just glides up the pitch with it. You know, he's in the opposition area more than he's in his own area half the time. But he helps to link the play. He helps to, you know, he's a defender, but he's an attacker at the same time. But he's just really classy with it. So it's going to be a massive miss. Having him out is a massive miss. We got Zenka, who we got on a free transfer. You know, he was actually a free agent, and we kind of needed an extra centre back, and we got this guy in, and he's good. But he's not Aya. And again, I always say these things with all due respect. I'm not disrespecting Zenka, and I'm not disrespecting any other player. It's like we're talking about Aya now and how good he is. Zenka's a very different player to what he is. So we have to adapt our game to play in and around what Zenka. And he is very quite traditional. He's very calm. He's very experienced. So, yeah, it does work in certain areas for us. But then we lose part of our game not having Aya, not having his... positional stents, not having his attacking, you know, nous as well, you know. But we have to make do. And, you know, what does that mean? Does that mean that Norgaard, who's a really great centre back, you know, comes back into defence? That's into the back of the three. That's a big question mark. You know, do we flip it and change our formation? I don't think we're going to do that. The big player that we had missed is a guy, you know, because we had quite a few injuries, and honestly, the key players as well. And it makes such a difference to a side with us, which we've actually realised that we've actually got quite a small squad. And I think what we decided to do is that we didn't want to go and blow money like Fulham did and spend like 150 million on players like straight up. And then it's like, oh no, these players aren't very good, actually. You know, so we actually ended up buying sort of four or five players and start to slowly slot them into the side. And I think that what I mean, obviously we've got quite good relations with our, you know, director of football and the coaching staff. And they sort of let us on a few things. And what I feel is that we're going to have a look at things in January, but based on the fact that we still got some more money left. So we're not blowing it all at once, and to see where we need to strengthen, you know. So, you know, with that respect, Ayers, unfortunately, looks like he's going to be out for at least a month, I think it is. Might be a little bit longer, you know. I think he's got a hamstring issue, which is frustrating. But listen, you're just going to have to deal with it. The other irony is that we've got Sergi Canos, who's obviously used to play for you guys as well. And Sergi Canos, who is a great winger. And, you know, we've got the song, "Ooh, Sergi Canos. How do you know how you score that goal? I want to know how you score that goal." And he scored a great goal for us against Reading, which has been, I wouldn't say a noose around his neck, but that's the one thing that people really remember him for, even though he's a real bad kisser, sort of browbeater, loves Brentford to the hill. He got injured for the Bees, and he was out for about a year. Then he came back, and he sort of kind of struggled when he came back to try and get to that next level, because he's so enthusiastic. He tries to just get in, you know, just throw himself right in, and he wasn't quite basically making the standards. And he got a bit of grief from a section of the Brentford fans, but he slowly came back into it, had a great season. We got promoted, But this season, we've actually flipped him from, in effect, left wing or right wing or left wing, whichever the wings that we're going to put him on, to right wing back. So he's actually our right wing back. You know, we've got our left winger playing at right wing back because, you know, Dalsgaard left, who was playing at right, right back for us, and he went back to Denmark to go to FC Michelin, which is our sister club over there. So we were lacking in those areas. And we said, you know, Sergio, you've played this position once or twice before. Try it out. And he's done it. And he's been really good, I have to say, because of he's basically given us an attacking option. You know, so our, you know, our wing back play is very important to the way that we play. So Sergio's actually sort of provided that. So that'll be very interesting to see how Norwich sort of kind of deals with deals with that, you know. But like I said to you, we're a bit, you know, we're a bit all over the place at the moment now. And I think the reason why this game is going to be a big tester for us is to see how much we're able to adapt with the new players coming in. You know, is Mbeumo going to be in or not? Is it going to be Force again? You know, that didn't really work against Burnley. You know, is it going to be, who's going to be in defence? You know, who's going to be playing in midfield? Is Jan Elt going to be back? Who's the key player I was going to talk about a bit earlier? We signed him from Bochum for 500 grand last season. And he signed him because Norgaard got injured for most of last season. And we were gutted because Norgaard's a brilliant player. But he is a man machine. Absolutely brilliant player. And the fact that he's been out for quite a few games, I think he's even out for the Chelsea game as well. So he's been out for quite a while. And him being out is massive for us because he covers so much ground. He presses, he tackles, he's just all over the place. So if he can come back in and slot in, you know, and help to give us that impetus back, that's going to be really, really key for us. But I can't say that's going to happen because injuries are, you know what they're like. You know, somebody will be back in 2 days and takes them 3 months to get back. So I'm just keeping my fingers crossed here.
Yeah, and that's kind of what's frustrating for Norwich is that their injuries have been all right so far this season. 2 years ago, they had a total injury crisis and you could sort of blame it on it. At the moment, it's pretty settled. But it's good to hear Canos is doing well. I think most City fans feel he was given a pretty raw deal by Alex Neil and that was fairly underused. And the way he bounced back was great to see. But I don't know if you're aware, but he became a bit of a cult hero for Norwich at the end of 2018-19 when you beat Leeds 2-0. I think it was Easter Monday and we'd all been at Stoke. And that was the first chance Norwich had to seal promotion or almost seal promotion maybe. And the players were all crestfallen on the pitch at the end because they'd thrown it away and they'd drawn 2-2 and they thought, oh no, Leeds are going to overtake us right at the end. And then Sergi set one up, scored one. We're all huddled around the radio because it was the late kickoff that day. And thanks to that, Norwich then were in control of things, went and won the next game and sealed promotion. So he did sort of take on that cult status eventually. Just finally then, on Norwich really, the sort of external view on Norwich, how, given that they won the title last season and you guys had to go through the playoffs, just how surprised have you been that they've had such a, you can't really avoid it, a disastrous start?
I mean, I'm a bit surprised. I mean, the thing is that, even though you won the title last year, I have to admit, I didn't think that you were as good as previous years when you've got promoted. You know what I'm right. saying? Yeah. That's just my personal opinion. You know, there's players like, I mean, just like I said to you, I think a couple of years ago when you won it through the playoffs.
Under Parker, they won the title as well. But they were more of a sort of buccaneering, swashbuckling team who conceded a lot of goals as well. All the games were dramatic, whereas last season they were a bit more defensively solid.
Yeah, maybe again, it's my view of coming into the championships at the time, being a new fan and a new team, and just everything being wow. And you know, and for us knowing that we've come from Division One, going, oh my god, we're going to play Norwich this season. You know what I'm saying? So it's kind of one of those ones. And you had Cameron Jerome in the side and players like that, who for me, I was like, wow, that guy's like, he's fantastic and they're so strong and, you know, so things like that. And also the time before as well, like I said to you, you had Maddison, who's a pain of friend of fans. You know, we're not very happy with Maddison after his goal celebration against us when he scored against us for you that time. And then he did it again a few weeks ago for Leicester City when he scored down our end after we gave him a bit of abuse. But you had players like that, so it was like, whoa. And I know you had Pookie, they've always got Pookie, and I thought that you were okay, but I thought that Buendia was a player who was fantastic for you, you know. But when Buendia wasn't playing, and again, you know, we've moved on now, so I'm not saying it's as a disrespect to Norwich. You just asked me a question, you know, about you. So I'm just being honest. And I think that when Buendia wasn't playing for you, you weren't necessarily quite the same side as you were with him, because he was actually a very, very good player. So you kind of almost like centered your team around him as a player, which is fine. You know, so you did really well. So now that he's gone, you know, it's and I'm not saying it's a one-man team as such, but I'm thinking that it's become more difficult for you to not only play the style of football, but play the style of football with a step up, you see. And I think that's the difficulty. And I think sometimes, you know, it is quite difficult when you get these players that are so good, and it could be hit and miss when you're doing your recruitment, I suppose. You know, we're quite lucky because with our recruitment, because, you know, the way that he basically is built his whole life and his whole business around, you know, the numbers thing, he's kind of got it quite set in his head how and what type of players that we're going to buy. So I'm not saying that we don't make mistakes, but we're kind of quite in, you know, quite in the game for the players that what we feel is going to fit the style for Brentford. So we're like, this is our style of football. This is what we do. These are the type of players that we want. And then they go out and they find it using the numbers and the stats, and also using their scouting system, and then, you know, sussing them out and seeing what they're like. So we're quite lucky like that. Yes, it's not 100% and it doesn't go right, but we've had much more hits than misses. And I think maybe with you, because you've had such a massive, like with Buendia, he was like properly up there. You had to kind of like try and find somebody that was up there again to try and replace him. And it's been quite difficult. So for your team to try and rejig itself without him, and obviously bring in a few new players, which probably, I wouldn't say that they're necessarily bad players, but because we had this problem after the year that we got to the playoff semi-final, our first year in the Championship, and we actually learned from it. We actually kind of, because the Warburton thing didn't really work out for us for various reasons, which we won't go into, because he had his way of doing things. He wanted to do things that way, and we wanted to go that way. So in the end, we moved on, and he moved on and went up to Rangers, and then we ended up doing our thing. But we ended up buying about 12 players in the close season. We just went, right, we just want to change everything. Everything's just going to be just different. You know, we're going to get rid of Warburton. We're going to get in a new manager who's completely different to Warburton. We're going to get a whole load of players who's different to Warburton. And we just did that. And then what we found was that we had made too many changes too quickly, and too many players were taking too much time to acclimatize to the style of football. Some of them had come from abroad. They didn't know about the UK and the jokes and the banter, and they just didn't know it. And it took a whole year for us to kind of get those players bedded in. And we kind of we realized the mistake that we made, put our hands up and said, look, we're not going to do that again next time. We're going to sort of do it sort of slightly slower, bed players in different ways, maybe not putting them under so much pressure so that they have to come straight in and we expect them to be fully running. And maybe it's the same thing with Norwich, where you've got your players who've come in and it's going to take them a bit longer to bed in. But unfortunately, because you're in the Premier League, you're kind of in the firing line a little bit. So, you know, whereas maybe if those players had been in the Championship, they would have got time and playing time in the Championship to kind of get that level, and you make them Premier League ready. So when they actually get up to the next level with the Premier League, then they're actually kind of ready to go. But again, I'm not a coach. I'm just you've asked my opinion, and I'm just sort of giving you a reason why, probably based on maybe a few of the mistakes that we've made. But, you know, I don't think you've got terrible players. There's no way you haven't got terrible players. I think that, you know, you had a bad start and you're in a bit of a hole. And as I said, you know, at any stage you could turn that around. And if you turn that around, you know, you never know. Burnley might come back this week and smash somebody 3-0 after beating us last week, you know. And that's football for you. And that's why we love it.
Top stuff. Well, it'll be really interesting to see how Daniel sets up, whether he'll go back to his back three, because he did switch to a back four again against Leeds and didn't quite work out. But it's going to be a really, really interesting game. Billy, thank you so much for your thoughts. And I'll say good luck for the rest of the season after tomorrow, because Norwich obviously are desperate for a win. But I think, well, certainly from my point of view, I really respect the work that's going on at Brentford. And I hope you guys manage to enjoy a bit of Premier League success.
Oh, thank you, thank you. Like I said to you, Norwich fans, come down, go to all the pubs. There's pubs around Kew Bridge. There's loads down the river as well. There's loads on the other side of the green, but also the old Brentford pubs are still in action. There's a couple of pubs which are around the old stadium. The Griffin and the New Inn are still in operation as well, pubs around there. And also the Globe and the Lord Nelson as well, which a lot of Norwich fans used to go to before, which are only about 15 minutes walk from the stadium as well. And you can, you know, you don't have to queue up for some 15 minutes to get a pint in those as well, but they're still quite buzzing as well. So loads of places for you to go for the match. So maybe I might catch you for a drink before the game, and we'll have a chinwag.
Welcome back to part two of Terrace Talk as we look ahead to Norwich City's trip to Brentford. Joining me is City fan Sean Gallier-Pace, who is a colleague of ours at the Eastern Daily Press and Norwich Evening News. Sean, how are you doing and how are you feeling about Norwich City at the moment?
I'm very well, Dave. It's so frustrating to be a Norwich City fan. I'm sure I speak for all fans at the moment. We've been through the ringer and it just doesn't seem like it's getting any better, unfortunately. You try to cling to a bit of optimism, but there isn't at the moment. And it will take the biggest Norwich City fan that you can find to try and give any at the moment. And that's just me being honest.
Yeah, it's difficult. And I also think part of it at the moment is in the Championship, you've normally got a game 2 or 3 days away, haven't you? And these big, long gaps in between games don't really help when you're wallowing and bottom of the league. Well, let's come to you with the big obvious question that is unavoidable at the moment. Are you sort of a Daniel Farker in or Daniel Farker out? Where do you sort of stand on the whole debate?
So now I'm Daniel Farker out, and it's so difficult because there's a real big split at the moment. I've seen, you know, many Norwich City fans still in staunch support of him and be like, okay, well, we've got Brentford at home. You know, we've still got Southampton, Newcastle, Wolves coming up. They're all winnable games. Why don't you give them those games? But if you give them those games, you're 14, 15 games in. We're already 8 points away from safety at the moment. We are cut adrift almost. It's getting to that time. It's November. It's the start of November, and it's already feeling like we're relegated, and that shouldn't be the case. How many teams in recent seasons have been completely cut out? And maybe, you know, Sheffield United a couple of years ago, but, you know, it shouldn't be that way. So I said last week before the Brentford game, not that before the Leeds game, that he needed to beat whatever way. We could have had a scrappy 1-0 win and it was an own goal, and that would have been enough for me. It didn't have to be a glorious performance as we've had over Daniel Farke over the years, but we just needed to get the 3 points. That hasn't happened. And what do you do? Do you keep giving him games and hoping he turns it around? I think he's got to go. And I do think, you know, he's got obviously Brentford now, and then we've got an international break. And I think that if it's another defeat against Brentford, you've got to use that time and act quickly. How many other clubs would keep a manager that's won 5 games out of 48 Premier League games? Not many. And I know that we operate differently. I know we're a self-funded club, but there comes a point where you just need to think, you know, we need to do what's right for the club. And it's hard to sort of come to that realization, because Daniel has brought us so many good memories and two promotions, but there's also been a catastrophic Premier League relegation as well. And I can just see us going through that same process, and that was hard enough the first time. Don't put us through it again. But yeah, you know, I do get it. It's a split at the moment. I'm very much on the thank you for the memories, but it's just time for a new approach and a fresh voice, and maybe that's what the players need. And I just don't see us getting any better, unfortunately.
Yeah, it feels pain for a lot of Norwich fans at the moment to be negative about Daniel Farke, because there's so much affection for him. And it's still only a few months ago that they won another Championship title. And it's not easy at all at the moment. But ultimately, in football, what's the one thing you can change, really? You don't really want to pull out Stuart Webber or anything. And that was the whole point of having a sporting director, wasn't it? Is that the head coach can be changed. And that is kind of how football works. If you want to, you can't sell the whole squad. You can't even sell a good chunk of the squad in January, frankly. The one thing you can do to change things is bring a new head coach or manager and a new backroom staff, really, isn't it?
That's the only thing you can do just straight away, isn't it? Obviously, you saw what happened at Newcastle. You know, that's the first thing the new owners did. They got rid of Steve. Well, they gave him his 1,000th game, didn't they? But they got rid of him quite quickly. And that's sort of what we need to do. We need to be ruthless and just sort of put the club first. I just don't think that they'll do it. And I think Stuart has already, you know, he spoke to you guys last week. He's backed his man. He's made his position abundantly clear. And I do think that the two are sort of inseparable and tied together. And I think if one goes, the other might want to go. So I think they're giving that 4-year contract in the summer. You know, it was obviously seemed like the right decision at the time. Should we have put a break clause in the contract? Is there a break clause in the contract that if we were this many points away from safety, you know, we can shake hands, and it's because it's probably quite expensive to get rid of him. And then there's a question, who do you get in? Is it, if we get someone else in, are they going to do any better than the players that we have? Do you know what I mean? Is the better the devil that you know than the one that you don't do? So it's, there's that question as well. Are they going to, if we get someone else in, are they going to actually do any better than Daniel would? And, you know, we saw that before a couple of years ago with Chris Hughton and Neil Adams. You know, Chris Hughton had 5 games left of the season to play, I think, and Neil Adams came in, and it didn't, you know, that manager bounce didn't really work either, because I don't think he won a game, didn't he? I think he drew against Chelsea, and that was that, and we still got relegated. So would we have been better in that situation to have kept Chris Hughton, because he'd been working with the players all season? And, you know, it's obviously the situation is slightly different, because, you know, there's still a huge chunk of the season to go. And this is why I think he needs to go earlier, sooner rather than later, so the new man can have time to work with the squad. But it just depends who you get in, doesn't it?
It does. I think that the way that things have worked out this season, that 4-year contract that you mentioned there, when that was announced, everyone was very happy about it. And when the transfer window closed as well, I feel like most people were pretty approving of the recruitment that had been done. It made sense at the very least. It looked like it was pretty good value for money and stuff. But maybe we haven't seen the evidence of that yet. And Stuart Webber has asked for that little bit more patience. But all of that is what is making all of this more frustrating, isn't it? Because, you know, if we boil it down to this game, the best thing probably still is for Daniel Farke to get a win. If they go and get a win at Brentford and they somehow manage to turn this around, A, it would be a heck of a story for them to dig themselves out of trouble from here. B, everyone would much prefer that Daniel Farke is the man that brings the success. It's just the alarm bells are ringing and it's unavoidable at the moment. But can you see that happening? That seems to be the big thing at the moment, that everybody, or not everybody, but a lot of people have made their minds up that those wins aren't going to come. So as we focus on this game, have you got any hope really of getting a result against Brentford?
I've always got hope as an Norwich fan, and that's the one thing that you can sort of cling to. You know, you've always got that belief on match day. You know, as hard as it is, like looking at the game in advance, you always get that thing, okay, we're going to win today. And, you know, working in the office ahead of games this season, you know, everyone's like, okay, we're going to win 2-0. We're going to win 3. Do you know what I mean? And you think it and you believe it, and then it happens and kick off, and you go, oh, okay, it's the same old story, isn't it? So there's always that belief. What I haven't liked is seeing fans be like, well, you know, hopefully we lose against Brentford because that might push him up. Because to me, that doesn't make any sense. You know, you support your club, you support the manager when that whistle goes and the games, but you've got to support the team and you've got to put all that aside and hope that Daniel turns it around. And of course, I hope Daniel turns it around. And that is, you know, a Brentford win would be a springboard and we would go on to bigger and better things. But based on what we've seen so far in the 10 Premier League games that we've played, I just don't see it, you know. And we've had opportunities to win games. You look at Brighton when we had all those chances. And I know you can't, you know, Daniel Park isn't playing up front and he can't make Josh Sargent score that chance. But you just look at it and you think, could he have done something different? Could he have played in a different way? We've got Christos Tzoulis sitting on the bench and we spent 10 million on him. Like, there's got to be a way to use the tools that you have in a better way. And, you know, maybe I'm just speaking with my football manager head on and, you know, and I'm trying to think about it in a silly way. But for me, I just think, yeah, we've got all those players sitting there and we've got Billy Gilmore is a Champions League winner with Chelsea. He's not even had a kick of the ball for 6 weeks. And I just, what's the point? Use the talent that you've got at your disposal. And we've got Todd Cantwell, who's not even played for however long. I know he's had a lot of sort of things going on. But that needs to be resolved sooner rather than later because we need our best players playing. And I think even our best players like, you know, Teemu Pukki's and Tim Krul, you know, they're not playing at the sort of levels that we used to seeing them. You know, Tim made that mistake, and you know, he's made so many saves for us over the years. We're not going to beat him with a stick for one mistake, but there's errors like that, and Timu's not getting the service, and it's would someone else, well, you just question, would someone else come in and get the best out of these players? Because at the moment, it's not Daniel.
Yeah, well, the Kabak one is the one that springs to mind as well, as you're saying that. You know, him trying to push out.
He thought he was a Dan, didn't he?
Yeah. Would another head coach have tolerated that almost? Would he have had the freedom, or would he have known you do not do that? I think a lot of it comes down to confidence, doesn't it? When you just look at the actual games, you know, like Sergeant's miss or various things, confidence is always a massive part of football, and they really don't have very much of it at the moment, particularly after that 7-0 thumping at Chelsea. Let's just turn it.
It was a better performance. I do think it was a much better. I know it couldn't have been much worse, could it? But that was pleasing to see, because I felt like there was a bit of a response, particularly in that first half. Where it went wrong was, you know, we conceded after, so we conceded so quickly after scoring the equaliser. And I thought the fans with us, you know, I thought that was the moment. Like, okay, we'll go on and win the game, you know. But just 2 minutes, there was no chance to get sort of that momentum, because Leeds just sucker punched us, and that hurt, because I was like, okay, right, that could be the chart, that could be the moment in the season where you just, you know, it just switches and it flips, and you know, that turns your season around, and it wasn't to be, and Leeds were there for the taking, and that's the thing that hurts, because you think at home against Leeds, you know, they're still down towards the bottom as well. You think that's a missed opportunity. We should have beaten them.
Yeah, it was after the goal, wasn't it? There was that surge, and then when the goal went in, the dejection and disappointment and pain, you could see it on the players' faces when that goal went in. I think it was Dion Dublin on Match of the Day 2, wasn't it? Highlighted how many players had their hands on their head. They just couldn't believe they'd managed to let it slip after working so hard, and they did probably deserve to be level, didn't they? But then once they conceded.
They did, and then, but they went 2-1 down, and then that was that. Then they were like, oh, okay, we've lost the game. And like at home with 25 minutes to go, you think, oh, come on, like you've got to do something different. You've got to go for it. You've got to, you know, it was just the same old story. And that's the most, I don't even remember a chance really afterwards because we just were just content, because we were so used to being like, oh, they were like, they got 1-1 and then we're like, okay, well, we've done our jobs then. It's not as simple as that. So yeah, I think many Norwich fans, we just expect more. We don't expect to win every game. We just expect a bit of, you know, effort, a bit of grit, a bit of a performance, something to cling to, and the fans will get behind. Just, you know, just look at that goal from Big Andy. You know, they got behind him. I know it was for 2 minutes, but they got behind him, and that's, you know, it's just so disappointing.
Yeah, I think the fans held up their end of the bargain on Saturday and responded to what Stuart Webber had said. Brentford, very different situation. They did have a bad result last weekend, which maybe there's a little bit of hope from. They lost 3-1 at Burnley, but you know, three wins on the board already. They beat Arsenal, they beat West Ham and Wolves. So you know, they're the sort of victories that Norwich couldn't imagine at the moment, are they? But to have 12 points on the board already, I guess maybe the player coming up through the playoffs has meant that they've come up with more momentum. Has it surprised you how well they've done?
It hasn't. It's a difficult one, isn't it? Because what I see in that Brentford team is what I saw in the Lambert team of 11-12, when, you know, it's a group of lower league players, but they're performing on the big stage now. So they are Premier League players now. So he's got a really, really good group of players there that are fighting for him, that are there for him, that believe in his ideas and are willing to give him everything. And that isn't what we have got. So when you think about Brentford, you think, okay, you know, I think of Bournemouth. Do you know what I mean? I think of when we were in the same league as Bournemouth, and you sort of think, well, we're a bigger club than them. Of course we are. Like Brentford, you know, they're a bog standard Championship team, but they haven't. They've got good players. Like they've got Mbeumo, they've got Tony, they've got all these sort of big physical Championship Championship-esque players that are actually performing above what you see them as traditionally. So it's frustrating that you look at them and you think, well, they're going to roll us over. At home with all the fans behind them, you can't see anything other than a Brentford win at the moment. And that shouldn't be the case. That shouldn't be the case, because Norwich are a major team in comparison to Brentford traditionally. Like, and we, you know, beat them last season and beat them to the title quite convincingly. And
Well, this will be the first time the clubs have ever met in the top flight. So that says a lot.
Can when you, show,
how many
just...
seasons have Norwich had? 27, 28 seasons in the top flight?
Yeah. And you don't expect to be playing teams like, not with all due respect, of course, but you don't expect to be playing teams like Brentford and thinking that Brentford are the ones that are in the ascendancy. You don't think that they're going to be the favourites to win the game. So to sort of come up against them, we're stark outsiders and expecting to lose. And you can imagine all the pundits will be saying, "Oh, that's the home banker of the weekend," because it shouldn't be that way, should it? And we shouldn't be going in thinking, "Oh, well, we'll be lucky to get a draw," because, you know, also at this stage, draws aren't good enough for us anymore. You know, we can't be drawing games. We need wins, and anything but is abject failure.
Yeah, particularly after just months after Norwich won the title and Brentford finished third. But this does feel like a very different Norwich team, doesn't it? So let's finish on your thoughts for the 11, really. What did you make of the changes that Daniel made in terms of shape and personnel? And what would you like to see? I think Brentford generally have been playing a 3-5-2, Sergi Canos on the right, and like some of the players that you've already mentioned, Tony and Bemo and things like that. So, yeah, what would you like Canos to see?
If only he was all right for us. Yeah. He wasn't really given the chance, to be honest. But what would I like to see? It won't happen, but I would like to see us revert back to what we used to be able to do and have the 4-2-3-1, have Krull in Tim Krull in goal, have Aarons, who I thought played pretty well on the weekend, Big Andy, Hanley. I'd probably go. I'm torn between Dimi and Williams, because
there's not much between them, is there? And there doesn't seem to be much between them with Farke, let alone that he's played on Aubameyang at left back last week. We should just say as well that we're recording ahead of Friday's press conference, so we don't know about Grant Hanley's fitness just yet. But Ben Gibson's available again, isn't he? Yeah, after his suspension. But it sounds like Kabak's not really in you. Anything to start then?
He's a bit like David Luiz. I think he's a good player, but he definitely has a mistake in him. He'll want to roam forwards. You know, he's exciting to watch, but I think he's more of a player that you have when you aren't bottom of the league. Do you know what I mean? I think he's a player. You see him run. I don't know who I've forgotten who it was against that he made that surging run forward and
took on Burnley, wasn't it? And then he didn't pass the sergeant.
Yeah. So it's nice to have a player like that, but not in this current situation that we're in. From the mistake at the weekend, and I just think we need a bit of more of a solid base against Brentford. I'll do that. Have that as the defence. I'm a big Billy Gilmore fan. You know, we just saw what he did at the Euros. I'd love for him to be back in the team alongside Norman, who's probably been our best player this season. I'd have them two sitting. I would have Rashica, who I like the look of, and I think there's a lot more to come. And everyone was really excited about the prospect of him and you know what he would bring to the team, which he hasn't shown it. To be fair, there was flashes. I think he had a couple of. It was that one out of frustration that he had at the end of the first half. The weekend, and then he had that free kick, and you think, wow, he's actually got a shot on him. So. Yeah. You know, get him into some space and maybe something can happen there.
That was probably his best performance so far. That's maybe not saying a lot, but, you know, he got an assist as well, didn't he? So,
it was nice to see that's what he's capable of. Mm. And, you know, I think he's maybe one of those players that's a bit inconsistent and, you know,
maybe getting used to the intensity of the Premier League as well. Hopefully there's more to come from him. So, well, there needs to be more to come.
Players like him need to step up and, you know, he'd be signed for a lot of money. And I'm hoping that, you know, I think we've seen enough to know that there is more to come. And, you know, he did all right. I think he did quite well last season at Werder Bremen as well. So, you know, there's potential there. So you'd have him in the team for me. I'd have Tezulis as well. It won't happen because for whatever reason, ever since he's missed that penalty against Liverpool, Daniel has given him harsh treatment. I think Weber said last week he wasn't signed to play every week. And I think, well, if we're spending that sort of money, why didn't we sign someone that would be able to play every week and help us stay up? Because that's a bit odd to me. That's alien, because like, why would you sign someone that for the money that we signed him as well for the future? Are we just to make a profit on him, or do we, you know, have ambitions to stay up and want to, you know, be able to have players that are going to give us an output this season? Because this is what matters. So have him on the other wing. You've got. I think again, there's potential there. We've not really seen it. We've seen flashes as well. You know, you just look back. I know, but Bournemouth are still doing well. But he had that performance against Bournemouth, and you think, wow, he's going to be, you know, the next best big thing. He's going to step up for us this season. We haven't ever seen that ever. But then we, you know, Sargent did that as well. So, you know, and that, look what happened there. So, it's again, another one with a point to prove, I think, and hopefully he will get in the team. Look, and I've put Todd in the, he's not going to come straight in, of course he's not, but in an ideal world, you need your best players playing, and Todd has got to be in that team as well. Okay.
But if not Dow, or?
I was then about to say Kieran Dow's got to be, playing in instead. And then obviously Timu. I'll drop Sargent. Again, you can't write players off too soon, but from what we've seen so far, me or you could have done the running about that he's done and have the same goal output. Like,
it's don't speak for me. Not this hamstring.
But I wouldn't have scored, but I'd have still done the running around that he's done in the last couple of weeks. So, you know, so that's the team I would do in an ideal world. I understand that, you know, we can't have Todd playing because of fitness reasons and whatever else. And there's a few other, you know, chants that probably won't happen either. Gilmore, I doubt, will play. Tudulis probably won't play. But that's the team that I would have with my Football Manager head on anyway.
Okay, great stuff. Well, I've just done a story for our websites just before we started recording about Josh Sargent being left out of the US squad. Adam Eder is in the Ireland squad. Pukki, of course, is in the Finland squad. But I said this in our podcast at the start of the week, that still, I think if you look at the three of them, if you want one of them to have a clear-cut chance in front of goal, it's still Pukki at the moment, as far as I'm concerned. So, yeah, I'm with you on that one. Thank you very much for your thoughts, Sean. Enjoy monitoring the game from afar. We will, of course, be at the Brentford Community Stadium on Saturday to keep you up to date with everything. So keep it locked at pinken.com. And thank you very much for watching.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.